So, it's working. You can hear.
Yeah.
Okay. I can hardly hear anyway. But as long as you can hear it, that's good enough. That's actually a very good phrase when you're meditating, to overcome a craving, to say to yourself, this is good enough. This is good enough. This is good enough. Because what that actually means, when you say this is good enough, instead of all seeing all the things which need to be fixed up, instead of seeing all the things which are wrong with your meditation, instead of seeing all the faults, you see what you've achieved already and how far you've got. And when you say that this meditation, however much you've achieved so far, this is good enough, it means that now you can relax and take it easy. And when you say it's good enough, and you let go of the fault-finding mind, this is good enough, it means you're not striving and struggling anymore, which means you relax, you rest, you stop doing things, and then you realize from that point it gets better. So from good enough, it gets very good. From very good, it gets wow. From wow, it gets very wow. And from very wow, it gets extremely wow. Oh, this is nice. Simply because it's a skillful means of letting go by saying, it is good enough. Today, was your breakfast good enough?
Yes.
So you don't need to have any lunch? If it's good enough, it means you don't have to think about food. Is your peace good enough? Because no, I want more peace. I want more stillness. I want deeper meditation. That is why you don't get into deeper meditation. One of my favorite meditation stories, which is difficult to teach, you know, because many of you come to the retreats here, and you go to the retreats in Jhana Grove in Perth, and you go to the retreats in Malaysia in Brickfield, where I've got a retreat. And you go, and you also listen to all the talks on the internet. So I don't think there is any story which somebody in this room has never heard before. It is impossible. It can't come to pass. Because whenever I talk, you've got these things sitting next to me. Everything gets recorded. And actually somebody told me that on the internet there's over 1,000 of my talks available from the internet. That's over 1,000. That's a lot of talks. And can you imagine anyone giving 1,000 lectures and never repeating themselves? It's impossible. If you read the Buddhist text, even the Buddha kept repeating himself. So I can't also avoid that. So this is one of my favorite stories, and this is about meditation. And this was the story of the old monks don't lie. How many, honestly, can remember that story, old monks don't lie? Put your hand up. Oh, that's so encouraging. There's only 4 of them. It's really discouraging when everyone puts your hand up and I've got to think of another story. Especially if I told it last night, because sometimes that happens. The old monks don't lie. A long time ago, there was a monk, and he was wandering from place to place. In Thailand, we call that tudong. In Sri Lanka, charika. It is just that tradition of monks to wander from place to place, never staying in one monastery in case they get attachment. So they would travel from place to place and put up a mosquito net at night time, or maybe stay in sort of somebody's shed, or maybe just sleep out in the fields, just to have this wonderful state of homelessness and peace and not being tied down to anything. So this is old monk who was traveling like that, and one day when in the morning he came to a person's house with his bowl on arms round. And the man happened to be a very, very devout Buddhist. And so he gave the monk some food, even though the man wasn't rich. And it was getting close to the time of the annual retreat, you know, the 3-month rains retreat. in Thai, Pansa, in Sri Lanka, Was, the time when the monks don't do any traveling. And the man happened to ask him, said, "Venerable sir, have you got a place to stay for the rains yet?" He said, "No." "Please, venerable sir, stay with us. My family will look after you. I will build you a simple hut in a quiet meadow next to the river. It's so tranquil down there, and all I ask from you is that once a week you give me some teachings on Dhamma and maybe on meditation, that's all." And the monk said, "Okay, I accept." So this family had this wonderful, kind old monk with them for the whole 3 months rains retreat. They fed him and he gave them teachings, and even the little children in the family he taught, and everybody grew to love that old monk. Even the dog would wag his tail when the monk would come. And after the rains retreat was finished, the man of the house, the farmer, said, "Venerable sir, we love you so much. You've been such a great help and inspiration to us. Please stay here forever." He said, "No, I can't. I have to go. In fact, I'll be going tomorrow." And they all started crying. Even the dog started whining. He didn't want to see the lovely old monk go. "But," said the monk, "during this retreat, my meditation has been very deep. And during one of my meditations, I've discovered very close by, there is a great treasure, a hidden treasure, which I want you and your family to have, so you never have to be poor again." And they said, "Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu," because everybody wants to be rich. "If there was a treasure buried in this hotel, would you like to know where it is?" "Well, I will tell you. Just like this monk said, I will tell you how to find the treasure. But you have to follow my instructions perfectly. These are the instructions. Tomorrow morning, I want you to stand at the doorway of your hut and face the rising sun. Just before the sun rises, pick up your bow and arrow," which he had to use for hunting, he was very poor. "Pick up your bow and arrow. Point the bow in the direction of the rising sun. And as the sun rises over the horizon, let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find the great treasure." And even though everybody was sad that the monk would leave, they were excited. Tomorrow, they would be rich. So the following morning, they were up there early, waiting for the sun to come up. And he remembered the instructions. Just before sunrise, he stood in the doorway of his house. He picked up his bow and arrow. And as the sun rose, he pointed the bow in the direction of the rising sun, and the sun rose over the horizon. He shot the arrow, and they all ran after it, his wife, the children, and of course the dog. And being a man, he told the wife to dig a hole where the arrow fell. You know what men are like. But be careful, men, you'll find out what happened to him as a result. Because she dug, and she dug, and she dug, and what did she find? Nothing, only trouble. Because the rich man who owned that land came, saw them, and said, "You're destroying my land. That's against the law. I'm going to sue you and take every penny you have for destroying my land." And the wife said, "It's not my fault, it's my husband's fault. He told me to do this." That's what women are like. And the husband said, "It's not my fault, it's this old monk's fault. He told me to dig this hole." And at that, the rich man said, "Old monk? That's strange, because old monks don't lie." What did that old monk say? And when the rich man heard the instructions, he said, I know where you went wrong. Look at you. You're so poor. You're so thin. You've got no muscles on you. You need to be rich and fat and strong like me. I'll tell you what, said the rich man. Tomorrow, I will fire that bow and arrow. I know where it falls. We'll find a great treasure because old months don't lie. And we'll split it 50-50. They had no choice. So the following morning, it was the rich man there who's standing at the doorway of the house. And this time, the husband had to carry the spade to dig the hole. That's karma. You get somebody else to do your dirty work, you have to do it tomorrow. So, as the sun rose, he picked up the bow and arrow. He pointed the bow in the direction of the rising sun. He shot that arrow, and it went much further, because he was stronger. And they all ran after it, the rich man, the farmer, his wife, the kids, and of course the dog. And this time the husband had to dig the hole. He dug, and he dug, and he dug. What did he find? Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time, the arrow landed in a field belonging to a general in the army. And the general happened to be coming past with his soldiers. And when he saw this man, this farmer, destroying his field, he told his soldiers, cut off his head, he's destroying my land. And the farmer said, no, it's not my fault. The rich man told me to dig this. And the rich man said, no, it's not my fault either. It's his old monk's fault who told us to do this. And at that, the general told his soldiers, stop. Put your swords away. I'm a Buddhist too, said the general. And old monks don't lie. What did he say? And when the general heard, he said, oh, it's obvious where you all went wrong. What does a farmer or a businessman know about shooting bows and arrows? You have to be a soldier, a warrior, someone who's trained in archery. Tomorrow, he said, I will shoot that bow and arrow. And where it falls, I'm sure we'll find a great treasure, because old monks don't lie. And we'll split it three ways. So they all agreed. And the next morning, it was a general holding the bow and arrow at dawn as the sun rose, standing in the doorway of the house, pointing the bow in the direction of the rising sun. And as the sun rose, he shot the arrow. And that went a long distance, because he was a professional. And they all ran after it. The general, the rich man, the farmer, his wife, the kids, and the dog. When they found that arrow, it was this time the rich man's job to dig the hole. And he dug and sweated and dug and panted and dug and sweated some more. He dug a big hole. And what did they find? Nothing. Only more trouble, because this time the arrow landed in the garden belonging to the king. That was big trouble, because the king had everybody arrested, including the general and the dog. And he asked the general, why did you destroy my field? And the general said, because the rich man's story. And the rich man said, no, it's because the farmer told me. The farmer said, no, because this old monk told us we'd find a treasure here. And at that, the king said, did you say, old monk? Yes, sire. I'm a Buddhist too, said the king. And I know that old monks don't lie. There's something strange going on here. I'll put you all in jail for a few days, even your dog, but I'll look after you. And I'll find out where this monk has gone, arrest him, and find out the meaning of it. It only took 2 or 3 days, they found that monk, brought him back to the palace, and the king interviewed him. Old monk, you've got these people into big trouble. Why? And the monk said, because, your majesty, they never followed my instructions.
What do you mean, said the king?
Listen, sire, I will explain it to you tomorrow morning. I invite you to follow those instructions. And I guarantee you, sire, that where that arrow falls, you will find that treasure. And it's enough there to be split four ways and make even you, a very rich king, happy. Imagine how much money there's there for the poor family. And the king agreed. And the following morning, the king was there, the general, the rich man, the farmer, the wife, the kids, and the dog. And the old monk as well. And so the king stood at the doorway and turned around to the monk. And the monk said, "Correct, sir." And the king picked up the bow and arrow and turned around to the monk. "Correct, sir." He pointed the bow in the direction of the rising sun. "Correct, your majesty." And as the sun rose, he was about to shoot the arrow. "Wrong, your majesty. I never told you to shoot the arrow. I told you to let the arrow fly." And the king understood. He parted his thumb and finger, and the arrow fell right between his feet where the king was standing. And there they dug only a small hole, and they found this huge treasure, more than enough to satisfy a king who had one quarter, and the whole family was very rich. And the monk said, "If you follow instructions, you will find the treasure, because all monks don't lie. And it's not just finding the money. When we let the arrow of craving fall, we let it fly, we let it go. Where does the arrow of craving fall? Right where you're standing. Right here. Right now. And if you let the arrow of craving fall right here, you will find the treasure. More than enough to satisfy a king, let alone you. You'll find the treasure of Nirvana. Right here, right now, where you're sitting, when you let the arrow of craving go. And it falls right where you are. But when you shoot the arrow of craving over there and over there, trying to find happiness, by becoming rich, or your business succeeding, or passing all your exams, or getting jhanas, or getting insights, if you shoot the craving over there, what do you get? Nothing, only trouble. And that's been the story of many people's lives. Craving this and craving that, and where it falls, you dig a hole, you get into more trouble. But if you let the arrow of craving go, it falls where you are, and there you find the great treasure. Peace, bliss, freedom, enlightenment. And that's very true. I can vouch for that, because now I'm over 60, I'm an old monk. And old monks don't lie. But that's a nice old story, which tells you about what meditation is. Now we're shooting the arrow of craving all over the place. And okay, you're not working now. You're not worrying about the stock market, maybe, I don't know. But we still even crave the spiritual things. We please let it all go. And it can only fall in one place, right where you are. And that is where you find the treasure. Which is why I spend a lot of time trying to get people to be in the present moment, just to be here. But that's where you find the treasure. Not thinking, oh, later on this afternoon, I'm going to get a nice meditation. Or later on this morning, I'm going to get enlightened. Or I'm going to go this afternoon, so this is it, this morning, I'm going to meditate here, and I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it, I really am going to get it. No, that's shooting the arrow of craving. Let it go. And there it falls, right here, and right now. And there, you find the arrow of craving. Or like my glasses. These are only reading glasses. I don't really need them to see, it's only to read things. But I keep them on my nose all the time, because that's the only way I can remember where they are. When I first started using these glasses,
I kept using them, and one day I was going into the city for the weekend, and I'd packed the bags for the city, onion bowl and my little bag, and just as I was leaving the monastery, I thought, oh my goodness, I can't find my glasses. And I looked in my bag, I couldn't find them anywhere. I looked on the car, and I couldn't find it anywhere, and I asked my driver, you better turn back, I've lost my glasses. And that's when he said, Ajahn Brahms, look on your nose. Has that ever happened to you? So that's why now I never put them in my bag, I always keep them on my nose, but that way I don't know where they are. But it's interesting, I was looking at every place trying to find my glasses, every place, except right here, on the tip of my nose. That's where you find the Dhamma, right here, right now, on the tip of your nose. That's where these things are. So that's why meditation is so easy to do. If you stop messing around, stop trying, for goodness sake. So, you're asleep. Well done. Very good. At least you're letting go. In the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha told the story of these 2 monks. As he was walking through the forest with his attendant Ananda, he saw the first monk sitting perfectly straight, in full lotus, right hand over the left hand, thumbs touching, back nicely straight, chin tucked in, meditating. Perfect posture. And he turned around to his attendant and said, I'm worried about that monk. Sure enough, a couple of weeks later, that monk was spoken and got married. Then he saw another monk in the forest, nodding. Nodding first this way, and then half asleep, with his robe falling off. Not quite, didn't say the robe falling off, I invented that one. But the Buddha turned to his attendant and smiled and said, I'm not worried about that one. A short time later, he became enlightened with all the sadhu power. So if you've been sleepy through this meditation, well done. A couple of more weeks. But that's actually in the Buddha's teachings. When I first read that, I never understood it. But later on, I was with this French monk for about 3 or 4 years. And he was one of these monks who would never, ever go sleepy while he was meditating. Even though he'd meditate all night, he had a perfect posture. And we talk amongst ourselves and thought, wow, that monk must have really good meditation. Everyone else was nodding and falling asleep, but not this guy. And then one year, he disrobed. And I couldn't understand why on earth did this monk disrobe. And when we talked to him, we found out. He said he could not stand the pressure anymore. He was controlling every time. He just could not let go. He was holding his body so tight, this force. He managed to do that for 3 years, and he could stand it no longer. He said sometimes when he was meditating at night, he would open his eyes and see monks like me nodding all over the place. And he was so jealous. If only I could do that. He was what we call control-free meditating. Yes, if you have enough willpower, you can hold your body straight. If you have enough willpower, you can even hold your mind still, but only for a certain amount of time. You just get very tight inside, and eventually you have no happiness, and you have to stop meditating. In his case, to leave, to monk for the disrobe. He was doing that out of fear. He said, all you need to do is just to let go. The sleepiness, that's a control-free person. He just doesn't even know how to let go enough to fall asleep. So quite frankly, I've been a teacher a long time. If you've been sleepy during your meditation, I really mean this, well done. At least you're letting go that much to be able to fall asleep. The real trouble people are the ones who can't stop thinking, they can't even go to sleep. They're always controlling it. A lot of times because of fear. Afraid what might happen if they let go a little bit of their life. They stop controlling. But look, it's wonderful to let go. Sometimes I went, I remember this one occasion, I went to give a talk to some executive group in Perth. And at the end, these are very, very sharp people. And they said, we weren't just listening to you, we were just looking at you when you gave your talk. And she said, I notice your robe is falling off. And he said, now that really describes what your meditation is like. He said, it's just so loose and free and open. And if it falls off, you don't worry about it. And she said, she was brought up in a Catholic convent where all these nuns were so tightly dressed. And said that's what their character was like. Everything was rules and regulations and so tight they were not relaxed at all. It was a terrible place to go to school in. Said this idea of being loose and open and free, that is showing you're letting go of trying to control your mind. You're leaving it be. And then it becomes peaceful, all by itself. You're letting go of the arrow of faith. Just letting go. It falls only one place right where you are. After a while all the sleepiness does go. Sometimes I'm sleepy because you know, I have to work very hard. Sometimes I don't get enough sleep when I'm back in monastery. Sometimes I'm tired. But if I am tired, I'm not embarrassed about letting my head droop down. I let it be. I don't fight it. But I know it's the controlling which stops the mind being peaceful. By letting it be, I don't fight it. The sleepiness soon disappears, like the sun coming up in the morning on a misty day. The sun just burns off the mist. The sun of mindfulness and kindness soon makes all the sleepiness vanish. But then when it does vanish, I'm peaceful. When I used to try and fight the sleepiness, you know, when I was a monk in Thailand, I used to find I haven't enough willpower if I want to use it. So I tried fighting sleepiness, and eventually you break through. But as soon as you broke through the sleepiness, I couldn't stop thinking. So I calmed down the thinking, calmed it down, and fell asleep again. You can never find that middle way where you're alert with no sleepiness, but not restless. It's either sleepiness or restless. Restless or sleepiness. Is that you? Because you fight. You really let go, just allow sleepiness to be. Open the door of your heart to sleepiness. Open the door of your heart to stupidity. Open the door of your heart to anything. You'll find the sleepiness soon loses its grip. The dullness evaporates. When it does evaporate, you're left with peace. You've been making peace all the time. That's actually how it works. I know that some of you are going home later today. Others of you are staying to do some more meditation. But whether you're going home or staying, once you get into this meditation, you can't really stop. Which is why I like to say not just how to do it, but what you can expect will happen. I've told many, many things about you know, the events which happen in meditation. Once the sleepiness disappears, you tend to wake up, you're naturally bright, you don't need to sleep so much. Already a couple of people have said, oh, during this retreat I have some insomnia. It's not insomnia. All it is because you're not using your brain so much, at least not as much as you do when you're working back at home, it means you don't need to sleep so much. If your car doesn't leave the garage, it doesn't need to be filled up with gas, with petrol. So because you're not using your mind and it's not stressful, you don't need so much sleep when you come on the retreat. But if you don't need to go to sleep, don't go to sleep. Just enjoy the peace and the quiet. It costs a lot of money to come on this retreat. So imagine, if you have 1 hour less sleep, you have one more hour in the resort, more than anybody else. You really are getting your money's worth. Because once you're unconscious in sleep, you can be anywhere. So enjoy the retreat. Go for the midnight swim. Or the 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock swim if you really want to. Under the moonlight. Meditate under the trees where there's no one else around. So quiet, so still, so peaceful. And if you can do things like that, you know, what you're doing is just working with your body and understand if you don't, want to go to sleep, you don't have to go to sleep. And that actually happens simply because you get some more energy coming up. Not only that, because you start to relax, the body starts to feel much better, and the mind starts to feel much better, and people start sitting longer periods of time. Already in those question times, people ask, how long should you meditate for? That's not really a good question. You meditate and meditate and meditate. When you feel like coming out, you just come out. It doesn't really matter how long it's been. And if you do things like that, you don't really worry about time, you will actually discover that you meditate longer and longer because you're more and more peaceful. You're not trying to break your PB, your personal best. It just happens, that's all. And you find because you're getting peaceful, because you're getting still, you tend to meditate longer and longer and get deeper and deeper. And sometimes you surprise yourself. You can meditate for hours. And you think, wow, how did I manage to do this? It's just natural, that's all it is. You sit, have a good time. But this is what you can expect as you get into meditation more and more. There'll be times when you're so peaceful, you carry on meditating and have a great time. Because what happens, you go through these stages of meditation, it's the stages of just becoming more and more still, more and more peaceful. And as you get more and more peaceful, you get more and more happiness. Remember that simile I gave of Samatha, Vipassana and Metta the dog going up meditation mountain. As you meditate more and more, it's not only you get more still, but you get more happiness, you get more clear. That's how you get the insights, because your mind is becoming brighter and brighter. The classic story I give, which you probably heard so many times, the monastery where I live, up in Serpentine on top of a hill, just south of Perth. For 7 years I've been going up and down that hill in a car. One day I decided to walk up the hill where I live. It's about 2 and a bit kilometers from the bottom of the hill to the top. But as I walked up, it was one of those experiences which I use as a simile for meditation, because it was strange. I could not recognize that hillside. Even though I've been living up there for 7 years, it looked totally different than what I remember seeing through the window of a car. And I couldn't understand what was going on. I started seeing things I'd never noticed before. And what I saw was more beautiful. I stopped still, and when I stood still, the hillside changed again. And it became even more beautiful, and I saw things I'd never ever noticed before in 7 years. It was such a weird experience. How come I was seeing this hillside for the first time after living up that road for 7 years, going up and down maybe 2 or 3 times a day? 2 or 3 times a week, sorry. And then I realized what was happening. The nature of sight. If you're looking through the window of a speeding car, the light which hits the back of your eye, the retina, does not have enough time to form a full image on the back of your eye before another image comes, dislodges the first, and you have to attend to that new image, and then another image, and then another image. The way the light forms on the back of the eye is a simple chemical reaction. The chemistry doesn't have enough time to work before another image comes. That's why you don't see fully formed images when you're looking through the window of a speeding car. As you go slower, as you get out of the car and walk, you have more time. The light which falls on the back of your eye forms a more complete image. And the colors are more developed, they're richer, they're fuller. So you see more and it becomes more beautiful when you walk. But when you stand perfectly still, only then do you have the time to form the full image on the back of your eye. And the colors, only then, are very rich and beautiful. That's why, when I stood still, I saw things in that hillside which you can never ever see looking through the window of a car. You don't believe me? When you go home to where you live,
You've probably always gone up and down that road in a car. One day, walk. Walk down the road where you live. And it'd be like seeing it for the first time. And that's very freaky. Because you've lived there for so many years. And I think you can understand that simile. Many of us live our lives so fast. It is like looking, like seeing, like hearing, like feeling through the window of a speeding car. We miss so much. And what we miss means it's not beautiful anymore. It's dull and washed out and ordinary. But when you go more slowly, especially if you stop, what you see, what you hear, what you feel, what you know, is more full, more complete, and far more beautiful. That is what happens in meditation. As you slow down, what you experience becomes much more beautiful, much more fun, much more full of pleasure. There's many stories, I say, of what happens when you start to slow down in meditation. Happiness just comes because everything looks beautiful. There will come a time when you meditate and you're very still, you open your eyes and look at the carpet. Wow, what a beautiful carpet that is. Is that a beautiful carpet you're sitting on? Pretty ordinary, isn't it? But after meditating, you can see so more, just many more colours in that carpet. And the shades of, you know, dark green or yellow and white become far more brilliant simply because you're going slowly. Your senses can pick up so much more. If you go outside and see a flower on a tree, that's incredibly beautiful, like it's being polished. All that is your senses are so slow, you can really see deeply into things. And I love telling the story that once in Jhana Grove, I was having a very, very deep meditation. I came out afterwards, and I just had to go to the toilet. And after doing my thing in the toilet, I just happened to look in the bowl. Wow! I'd never seen such beautiful shades of brown before. Not just one brown, but many different deep browns and golden browns. And the shape of this thing floating in the water. The way it was put in these little balls, put like it was some sculpture who had actually put all this stuff together. And the way, because it always has a little bit of mucus on the outside, the way it glistened like some jewel, you know, from some jewelry shop in Orchard Road, glistened and sparkled like a diamond. And I haven't got on yet to the fragrance. Oh, that's so rich. You know, more like Chanel in the toilet, the contents of a toilet bowl. And it looked so beautiful. This is actually a true story. Never in my life had I seen such a beautiful piece of shit. And it was so hard. It took me so much effort and letting go to press the button and detached from it. And those are true stories, because if that happens, and a piece of excrement looks so beautiful, that's the sign you get a good meditation. So if you see someone in the toilet cubicle next to you, and they're looking at the bowl saying, wow, look at that, you know they've just had some good meditation. Because that's what happens. You see more deeply into things. You can actually appreciate beauty much more. You're a happier person. And that's what happens in meditation. It really gets very joyful and very ecstatic. Simply because you're letting go, you're finding that treasure. More than we would satisfy a king. More than we would satisfy anybody. It satisfies you. Peaceful, calm, joyful, having a great time. So you can tell the progress of your meditation simply by how much happiness you have. Sometimes people come and ask me, and they say, oh, I got this jhana, I got that jhana. But a lot of times I don't believe them. Instead, I look at their jhana indicator, which is their mouth. If their mouth is horizontal, sorry, you haven't got anything. If their mouth is turned up at the edges, maybe. If it's almost reaching their ears,
okay, you've got it. That's what actually happens. You get so peaceful, so much joy. And it's such a revelation to know that in religion you can have fun. You know, I remember religion as a kid. We'd go to these churches, there were freezing cold, stone walls. There was no upholstery on these hard oak benches called pews. And the priest would give such a boring sermon. There were never any jokes at all. I can't remember any jokes said at a service in. It was just so dull and heartless, and there was no joy and happiness there. It was such a wonderful revelation, and when I came to do some meditation, it was full of joy, full of happiness, and full of peace. It's just really what I wanted, like everyone else wants. It's not just peace, it's blissful peace. And the more you meditate, the happier you become. So when you get home, if you're getting more miserable, you are not meditating the correct way. Even if you think you're enlightened, you've got all this wisdom, I'm sorry. If you're more happy, more free, more alive, less controlled, more able to adapt to life as it changes, all that, you're getting somewhere in this meditation. And that's actually how it works. So you sit here, no expectations, with expectations is going off into the future. Just sitting here, being with this body first of all, relaxing it, being with this mind, present moment awareness, no past, no future, get rid of all that stuff. That's not going to make you peaceful. Being in this moment, not controlling this moment, just letting it be, being kind, being gentle, being at peace with this, no matter what it is. Even if it's a restless mind, just leave it alone. The restlessness is old karma, the result of having worked so hard. The tiredness is old karma, because again, if you're working too hard, your brain is tired. You can't change the result of old karma. All you can do is make sure you're making good karma right now. Which means even if you're restless, make peace with it, be kind, be gentle, just leave it alone, let it be. One of my stories, to say what I mean, one of these extreme stories, after being a monk for about 5 or 6 years, I found this wonderful monastery in the north of Thailand, in Medang district, up in the mountains. Remember, I was an English monk. Because I was an English monk, and I still like my tea, that's what attracted me to my teacher, Ajahn Chah. Anyone whose second name meant tea was a teacher for an English monk. So I went off to stay with Ajahn Tea and became his disciple. And then when I heard this monastery was in the middle of a tea estate, high in the mountains above Chiang Mai, I thought, wow, that's the place for me. This was like the dream monastery for an English monk. Abandoned, deep caves, good food, and best of all, no one was interested in meditation or hearing teachings. Great, they could leave me alone for the whole 3 months. Now, all they wanted to do was to feed me once a day. I thought, deal. So I went up there and had this wonderful time. The perfect monastery. No one to bother me. Could meditate all day, just one meal a day, nice, easy. Enough tea as I could, I could bathe in the tea I had so much. And things started going wrong. First of all, it was okay. But then I started being restless. And more restless. And more restless. And when you get restless, you start thinking really weird things. And I started thinking of what I call unmonkish thoughts. Of old girlfriends. Of romance. Of sex. Even weird things as well. I didn't want to think about that sort of stuff. I'm a very good monk. I like being a monk. But then stop it. None of that stuff. But you know, the more I tried to stop it, the more these unmonkish thoughts started coming in. The picture of this old girlfriend, I wonder what she's doing now. No, stop it! Romance, I'm still very young, and I can still, no, stop it! And all that sort of stuff started coming in, now fantasies like men have, and girls have as well. And I tried to stop it, I couldn't. And it was really driving me crazy. And it was getting worse, and worse, and worse. And the terrible thing was, there was no one staying with me. I was by myself. I had no one to talk to and ask advice from, so I was going crazy. Until I thought of this idea. There was a big Buddha statue in the room. So I decided to talk to the Buddha. Weird. Oh yeah, a brass statue. So I said I was in trouble and I said help. And sometimes, you know, may not get advice from the Buddha, but you get an inspiration. I got an idea, a strategy. And my idea was to make a deal. And the deal was, from 3 to 4 p.m. every afternoon, I'd allow myself to think of anything. I would not stop any thought at all. The weirdest, the most unmonkish thoughts, the sort of thoughts or fantasies I would never dare to tell anybody. You know, you have those as well. Be very careful when you're in front of good monks who may be able to read your mind. If I wanted to raise some money to buy the new Brahm Center, I could do that very easy through blackmail. But I won't do that, so. I know what you'd be thinking about. No, you wouldn't do that. So, from 3 to 4, anything goes. Weirdest, kinkiest, strangest, any thoughts at all could come in from 3 to 4. I wouldn't try and stop it. That was the deal. The rest of the day I'd behave. I thought, well, if you really want to think, you know, unmonkish thoughts, you can do it from 3 to 4. That's my unmonkish thought, restless mind, sexual fantasy, romance, anything goes out. And the rest of the day I'd behave. That was a good deal. I thought that would work, but not the way I expected it. Still, it was a struggle. Still, you try and let go and all these thoughts would come in. You try and watch your breath, and it was like someone bursting through the gates with a tank, all these fantasies and thoughts. And yeah, that's really tiring, trying to stop your mind from being crazy. It's so tiring that when the 3 o'clock came, I was so relieved I didn't need to fight anymore. I went up to my room, leant against the wall, and said, okay, whatever you want to think about, I'm not going to stop you now. Anything goes. Come on, whatever fantasy, dream, romance, old girlfriend stuff, any memories, whatever, go for it. And for the next hour, I watched every breath so peacefully without missing one. It was the most peaceful hour of the whole day. Totally unexpected. How come? Well, I say, okay, fantasy, sex, anything, come in. All I could do was watch the breath. But when I was fighting, all these fantasies and thoughts and lessons kept on coming. And I realized from that experience, that's true experience, that when I tried to stop those fantasies, I was actually feeding them, making them stronger. When I was fighting restlessness, I was causing more restlessness for the future. That's where it was coming from. I wasn't understanding the law of karma. You fight, you struggle, you cause restlessness. You let things be, and everything becomes peaceful. The light says, okay, come, you can come if you want. Fantasy, thought, whatever, restlessness, come on, you can come if you like. Then it gets so peaceful and calm. Because you're not feeding it. All restlessness comes from not being content where you are. When you're not happy where you are, you want to go somewhere else. When you're not happy with your own mind, it fills the space with thoughts, plans, fantasies, or whatever. When you're very happy being here, there's no way you can think. You don't want to destroy or miss this beautiful moment for now. Well, that's actually how you overcome the restlessness. By being a friend, by being at peace, by letting these things be, not fighting. Now, at first, when you let go, the thoughts or the fantasies may increase. That is just when you haven't got the grass here. When you put down the grass, it moves more when you first let it go. But don't worry, leave it alone. It will soon calm down. Be patient. But what you're doing, you're making good meditation karma. Making peace, being kind, being gentle, not fighting. Yeah, you have to withdraw some thoughts, some stupid thoughts. Just make peace with them, be kind, be gentle. It doesn't take that long if you really are making peace, being kind, being gentle.
where it all stops. Everything gets so still and peaceful. Relief, moving, because you're making peace, being kind, you're not trying to stop anything. Or encourage anything, gets better and better, and it just stops by itself. And that's the beautiful part of meditation. Not forcing or controlling your mind. If you force or control, that just creates more movement. That's where the fantasies, the restlessness, and all those terrible thoughts come from. You let things be, everything starts to slow down and stop. Try it out. Be courageous and see what happens. You just leave things alone. And then you have restlessness, there you be restless, there you go. You find it soon stops, and you're peaceful. So that's a little talk for this morning. It's now 10 o'clock. We can have a toilet break, and then we can come back for a few questions, followed by a guided meditation from half 10 to 11.